Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
She is a cave diving expert. Her name is Kara Rolson. And I thought she laid out perfectly to where even an idiot like me could understand just how treacherous and dangerous this was.
It was a really good feed. She had pictures and everything.
Yes. And I thought to myself, why not creepily DM her and see if we can get her on the program? And here she is.
Here we go.
Hey. Hey, everybody. Yeah, so he just kind of slid up in my DMs like, hey, what's up? You want to talk on my radio show? Not creepy at all, I promise.
I got a radio show. You want to talk about being underground in the water, all wet and dark? Let's do it.
Yeah. So, hi, guys.
Well, believe me, the thought did cross my mind as I was sending the message, like, please God, like she realized that this is legit. It's like it's not out of our basement. That's why I threw like the ESPN label gives you some sort of credibility.
Sure.
And so yeah. I'll try to throw that out there. I'm like, I swear to God, this is not just two idiots in a podcast in a basement somewhere. We're actually affiliated with a major company.
Kara, this is a real show and we are really on the air right now and we really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Well, that's good because I am actually a real person. So I'm glad that we're all real people with real jobs.
Exactly.
Now, you are a cave diving expert. First off, how does one become a cave diving expert, and how long have you been diving just in general?
I think you become a cave diving expert the same way you become an expert in pretty much anything else. You start early, you do it a lot, and you just build a real big base of knowledge. So I got started in 2000 when I was 18 years old, and basically it's the family business. Both my mom and dad were dive instructors. My dad was a dive instructor for cave and cavern and all kinds of mixed gas, you know, the different types of gas mixtures you can take. I mean, pretty much anything that you can be certified to be an instructor in, he is. And so when his big thing was he's just really into cave diving, you know, it's kind of a foregone conclusion that I'm going to get certified in cave diving. So I did.
Now, I don't know if you heard us before, but when I first heard the story of the boys missing in the cave, now, I have never been scuba diving. I've snoobed. I've snorkeled a time or two. That's about the extent of my water knowledge. I basically get a Daffy Duck raft and I drink like a Mai Tai as I float around a pool somewhere. That's really my comfort level. I had no idea why this was so dangerous. And I think that in general, people did not understand why this was such a dangerous rescue operation. What is it about cave diving and a situation like this that makes it so much more dangerous than I think anyone really realized unless you're an expert in it?
So I think the biggest difference is you're looking at three things, really. The first thing is the environment. It is so different from open water diving. In an open water diving situation, if you have any kind of emergency, medical emergency, critical gear failure, anything happens, you can ascend to the surface where you are guaranteed oxygen and probably a nice safe boat to get on. When things go south in a cave dive, you have 30 to 90 feet of rock over top of your head. There's no gently ascending to the surface. Your best bet is you've got to go out the same way you came in, and good luck to you because you could be 30 minutes away from the surface at that point in time. So that's one of them. I think the other thing, you know, the real big difference between the open water and the cave diving that people don't really understand is because of that environment, there's very specialized gear and there's very specialized training. So you have to do a pretty long course. You need to have a depth of knowledge already to begin with. Most instructors want a certain amount of dives, open water, before they'll take you on as any kind of student. And then you've got some specialized gear as well to help you literally survive in the situation you're going to put yourself in.
If you're underground in a cave like that, is it, and I would imagine it is it just easier also to get disoriented, to know which way's up, which way's left, which way's right? Or, I mean, I would imagine open water, you can see some light above you at any given time and figure out that way's up. Is it harder to do that when you're in a cave like that and it's completely dark?
A little bit. So you're going to actually carry three lights with you, one of them being a really bright primary light, and then two backups, because the name of the game is redundancy. You don't ever want to fail on your one piece of gear. So you do have a light that's helping you see what's in front of you and around you. Believe it or not, gravity still works underwater. So, you know, if you drop an object or if you, you know, exhale, bubbles will go up, objects will go down. So you can always kind of figure out up and down from that. But the cave environments themselves get really confusing. One of the things that, you know, kind of specialized gear I talked about, they put down what we call a main line through the middle of every cavern. And this is, generally speaking, a pretty permanent fixture. It will always guide you out. They put little arrows in it, you know, little plastic arrows that always point the direction to the closest exit. And some of them are pretty cool. There's a cave in Mexico that I was in. There's the marker, and to be able to help you see the marker, there's a little plastic gator with a Barbie doll in its mouth. You cannot miss it. It's awesome. And let me tell you, trying not to laugh when you have a big regulator in your mouth is quite the chore.
Now, you mentioned, like, when you're in these, you can be 30 minutes, you know, in or an hour into a cave, and if something goes wrong, if you have an emergency in that, I mean, is that it? I mean, what do you do when you're 30 minutes out and you have something happens with your equipment or you get tangled up, and, you know, is that basically the end of you?
No, not necessarily. A medical emergency is probably going to be the most critical thing. That's why, you know, as a cave diver, we're always very conscious of our own health, making sure that, you know, we're not putting ourselves in a scenario where we might have a medical emergency, because that's not just a risk for you. That's a risk for your dive buddy as well. The dive buddy is probably the most crucial part of this, because you always make sure that you turn around with enough air in both of your tanks so that if one of your tanks, you know, has a failure, the two of you can still have enough oxygen to get out. So if all of your lights die, all of your equipment dies, something goes terribly wrong, your buddy has backups that you could kind of beg, borrow, and steal from them.
We're talking to Kara Rollison here, a cave diving expert. The Navy SEAL guy, all the kids got out okay, the coach got okay. The Navy SEAL ended up dying trying to get to the kids. Does this happen quite a bit in situations when cave diving? Is it uncommon for that? Or unfortunately, if you do this long enough, you see tragedies like this?
I wish that I could say that it is uncommon, and it is. I mean, on a yearly basis, it's fairly uncommon. But when you've done this long enough, you will see tragedy. It's kind of like when people talk about with motorcycles, there are those that have laid their bikes down and there's those that will lay their bike down. I think if you keep in cave diving long enough, there are those that have friends that have died, there are those that will. You know, like I alluded to in my Twitter thread there, in the 18 years I've been doing this, I've lost three friends.
Ooh, yeah. Your understanding of this particular dive, and I may be wrong here. Obviously, these guys didn't go diving into this cave. They went hiking in 2.5 miles, and then the cave flooded, and it became a diving situation. Your understanding of the technical nature of what this rescue entailed, is this the most difficult dive that's ever been undertaken? Or it just seems amazing to me that they got everybody out, other than obviously the one Navy SEAL, unfortunately. It's amazing to me that they got these kids out who had, some of them didn't even swim. Is that your understanding of what took place, that it was a miracle, basically?
I would say that to your initial question, is it the hardest dive out there? It's kind of hard to quantify. I mean, there are different things that would make a dive difficult. What made this more difficult than, you know, even an average dive or an average difficult dive is that you're adding in a young man that, like you said, some of them had never swam before. You're teaching them to cave dive, which is one of the more extreme sports, obscure and extreme sports. You're trying to teach that young man how to do this, like, on the go. Like, you have to learn how to do this and then go. I mean, I think that's basically like handing a 16-year-old the keys to the car and going, here you go, buddy. Go get into the Indy 500. You'll be fine.
Right.
So, you know, that makes it difficult. You don't really know how that child is going to be able to react once you get them into the water, because as they're passing through, they're kicking up mud and dirt and silt. Some of it will be clear. I think some of the video that I saw was pretty clear. But you have to accept that at some point in time, it's going to get very murky and you're not going to have any visibility. And while we do carry, you know, those three lights, and some of them are very powerful, when it gets murky like that, and that silt and mud and dirt gets kicked up into the water, flashing that light around is the equivalent of turning on your high beams in fog. You get a really great, you know, reflection of the fog, but you can't see anything beyond that. So that's one of the technical difficulties, and something else that can, you know, potentially spook the young man that's with you. Well, so I think those are some of those things that really just make it incredible that they made it out all safely.
And you brought up one thing too there that really stuck out with me, that when you're rescuing someone, if they panic and they start to, you kind of mentioned that if you ever try to rescue someone, they basically try to drown you. Right, they're grabbing around your neck, they're pulling on stuff, and I'm guessing that situation, if something gets pulled off or shook loose, or a kid panics and grabs a piece of equipment he shouldn't, you're in a lot of trouble.
Right. So the lifeguarding training that I've had really touched on a lot of this. You know, when you see somebody who's drowning, at that point in time, their higher neurological functions are gone. They are literally in survival mode only. And so what they're doing as they're thrashing and grabbing at you, it's not out of ill will. It's not out of malice. They are purely on instinct, trying to save themselves as they're thrashing and pushing you under to get themselves above water. So if you think, you know, somebody who feels like they are drowning doing that, now you put this scared young man in there, you know, there's some potential that could have happened as well. And the way the gear is set up, you know, it's very easy to hit somebody in the mouth, knock that regulator out, especially where it's, you know, murky, you can't see very well. Trying to re-grab that regulator, put it back in your mouth, you have to know your gear exceptionally well to know where to reach to retrieve that piece of gear. So, you know, there was a lot of extra threat and danger added on to this.
This is an absolutely amazing story, and we're talking to Kara Rollison. She is a diving expert. I found her on Twitter at @where_is_puff. She had a phenomenal thread talking about the challenges, and hey, we appreciate you coming on with a couple idiots here in Portland and taking a couple minutes and explaining just how dangerous this really was.
Sure, thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.